you'd gotten to the place where that impact of the job, kind of turning your husband into a person that you didn't recognize,
mm-hmm.
feeling like this job owns more of you than I do, and that's not okay anymore.
It had to be pointed out to me. I wasn't going to put it together on my own.
Welcome to Habits for Your Happily Ever After, where we get clear about your marriage communication. Because when your relationships are strong, you're able to concentrate at work, reduce conflict at home, and receive support for your dreams so that you have the courage to live your best life. I'm Rebecca Mullen, a relationship coach living in Western Colorado. And today my guests are Mitch and Michelle Brooks. I met my guest today, Mitch Brooks, because I volunteer for the Grand Junction TEDx event. And he came from Baltimore to Colorado to speak on the topic, your stressful day should not turn into your family's nightmare. Mitch spent the bulk of his career as a firefighter and paramedic for the SWAT team in Baltimore. He's also a Navy veteran. You can imagine that's a pretty stressful job, but he didn't think he was bringing that stress home until one day when he stepped on a half-melted ice cube and he completely lost it. He swore and yelled and stomped up the stairs to get a new pair of socks. And when he came downstairs in a dry pair of socks, he no longer felt agitated, but as he walked out the door to go to work, his wife, Michelle, zinged him. You're scary when you're angry. That phrase rang in his ears for the entire 45-minute drive as he headed to work. He didn't want to be a bully in his own home. He had three daughters. He was the tickling dad, a dad who took his girls to the playground. He didn't want his girls to fear him. I'm going to link to Mitch's TEDx talk in the show notes. And I highly recommend that you watch it, either because you or your sweetheart has a stressful job you might be unwittingly bringing home, or because you live in a community where someone else is willing to take on that stressful job of being a first responder. I think it's important that we understand the sacrifices other people make so that we can have an emergency response team that we all need. The sign in the firehouse where Mitch works read, "Check your emotions at the door." And Mitch took that admonition seriously. The only problem was he and many other people forget to pick those emotions back up as you head home. I have a personal connection to Mitch's message. As many of you know, my husband is an emergency room physician. His job has stressed our marriage. The first reason a job like that stresses a family is there is absolutely no predictable rhythm. My husband has gone into work at 5 a.m. and he's gotten off of work at 5 a.m. That constantly shifting of your body clock takes a toll on anyone's patience and ability to engage with family life. But a job like my husband's or Mitch's is filled with zillions of tiny, dramatic moments. And over a lifetime of facing that exposure, it eats at you. And your family can feel it. Today, you'll hear from Mitch's wife about how she learned to function on her own with their daughters, eventually not even including Mitch in family plans because she knew he could be called away at any moment. You'll hear how Mitch found help. He has a handful of habits he uses regularly so he can continue doing the work he loves and is filled with purpose, but his family no longer needs to pay the price. My purpose in having this couple here on the podcast is so that we can all learn to watch for those invisible stressors that take a toll on a family. Additionally, to learn from the two of them the strategies they've learned and implemented to heal the parts of their relationship that Mitch's job hurt. While their daughters were growing up, Michelle stayed home to raise their girls. These days, she works in the public school system helping teenagers. Let's welcome Mitch and Michelle Brooks.
I want to welcome you both. Thank you for coming to the podcast. So, Mitch, can you give us just a tiny example of the kinds of 911 response calls that you show up to?
So I was a fireman and I was a paramedic. And then I got picked up by the Baltimore City SWAT team as one of the tactical paramedics. the call volume, many and varied, from a fire call to just a medic run to being detailed from the fire department to the police department to run as a SWAT medic. So running with SWAT was anything that was from a high risk raid to they had hostage situations or barricades. They always brought a medic with them.
So your work takes you into these incredibly violent or catastrophic situations. And then what I want you to do, and you did this in your TED Talk, is tell us about your girls.
So I have three daughters. The first two were 13 months apart, and my youngest came 4 years later. So I was the guy that would be outside with the sidewalk chalk creating bases, and we would be playing kickball, and we would have neighborhood water fights in the summertime. If it snowed, it was, let's put the bathing suits on, run outside real quick, make snow angels, come back in freezing and cold. Michelle laughing at us like we're a bunch of hooligans and nuts. I owned a Jeep for a good many years, and it was an old Wrangler. So having them in the Jeep with the top down going to the park, I would do that to give Michelle a break, right? So I would get off work. I worked four on, four off. Unfortunately, I worked a secondary job and I picked up a lot of overtime, which I look back on and it was like, man, if I could do anything different, that would have been one of the things that I'd done different. I wouldn't have spent nearly as much time on the clock.
That's nice. Now, tell us about the moment with your wet sock when you sort of lost it.
The sock thing was, I'm on my way to work. I used to keep my boots by the front door so they wouldn't come onto the carpet, right? So I would always kick my boots off. So getting ready for work, I'm in socks. And I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but if an ice cube breaks away from the glass you're trying to put it in, ends up on the floor, you end up with a cold puddle. And I stepped in that with my socks on. I don't know why that made me irrationally angry. But so I went from, you know, just being like normal, happy-go-lucky, everything's cool, to literally raging about stepping in a cold puddle, like ripping the sock off my foot, just cursing and acting like a complete lunatic, stomping up the steps, changing socks, coming back down. And Shell asking, you know, like, why are you so angry? And I didn't, you know, like being able to blow it off, like, what are you talking about? Because by the time I come back down the stairs, I'm not nearly as insane. So what the comment of you're scary when you're angry. And that's the way I told the story in the TED Talk. And there was an incident like that. There was another one where I had been yelling at Lucy. And Michelle asked the question again. The way that she said you're scary when you're angry really hit. Really hit. Because I'm an adult and I'm yelling at a child. And there's no way that that's not scary. I felt like a bully. I could live to be 100 and never feel like that again and be perfectly content, never experiencing anything like that again. So I was properly motivated to make some changes. We'll say that.
Michelle, what did it take for you to say you're scary when you're angry to your husband? Because he's this happy-go-lucky guy who takes the kids out in their swimming suits to make snow angels in the winter, but also the guy who stomps up the stairs. I'm sure that was hard to say.
I mean, I think probably just kind of having had enough of it. And then, you know, there's a distance that starts to happen. He wasn't home a lot. Yeah. And you could tell when he was mad. And I told him about this. His jaw, man, he would clench his jaw. So I used to like internalize that. And then I guess I got to a certain point in time where I'm like, okay, I'm not going to internalize that anymore. And I think like the kids and the girls, and then thinking, you know, they're like little girls, you know, like I would hear him say things like, you got to man up. And I'm thinking, yeah, but they're six. They're not going to man up, right? So they're little girls. You're supposed to be their daddy and they're supposed to feel safe and protected that way so that no man ever treats them that way. So I don't know. I guess at some point in time, I was like, okay, this is kind of like scary and I would rather you just not be here. You know, there was like this culminating thing that I was just like, okay, that's enough.
Yeah. And just drawing the line in the sand, it sounds like you've gotten to the place where that impact of the job, kind of turning your husband into a person that you didn't recognize, feeling like this job owns more of you than I do, and that's not okay anymore.
It had to be pointed out to me. I wasn't going to put it together on my own. If she didn't wait as long as she did, and you said it to me earlier, I'd have been like, my self-perception, okay, I truly believed, and this is something that became a joke in the family, right?
Yes.
I believed I was laid back. I believed I was like a laid back, easygoing person. I was also for a long time, like I loved what I did. I felt like how could this possibly be having a negative impact on me? Like I started to get good at what I did. I was happy with it. It was important work.
I know that there's a culture of get over it, and yet it's having this negative effect. What did that tension feel like in you?
So if we're talking about the culture, so best summed up, the expression of this is a firehouse, leave your emotions at the door. And I work with a woman named Kat. She's an amazing therapist. One of the things that I heard her drop was, that's true. Leave your emotions at the door. Just remember to pick them up when you go home. And that's what I wasn't doing. So we're going to call this a long, slow burn. And then I had a couple of events that happened where I started to harbor a resentment. There was a cheating scandal on a promotional exam. I died number one on the list. And I was on edge and not right. I did mention that in the TED talk. I did have some of the boys help me work through the resentment and let that go. That was the beginning of a turning point. And then there is a 100% abuse of the 911 system through certain people. There's also the hours. So I worked 10-hour days and 14-hour nights, and they flipped, right? So I do two 10-hour days, then I do two 14-hour nights. So all of those things kind of acted like the pressure cooker. Right. Mm-hmm. And then they were manifesting in anger and lack of empathy.
As Mitch is describing the slow burn, I'm imagining that you're kind of watching your husband, the man you married, slowly disappear. What was that like for you?
He would walk in the door from work and he would be ranting about something at work. And I would be like, oh my gosh, is today the day he's going to quit? Like, we're not going to have health insurance. Like, all the stress of that. So he was definitely unhappy. And I think a lot of that came after that promotion scandal, cheating scandal, to where it just wasn't what he expected or what he deserved, frankly. I mean, he worked a lot so that I didn't have to work. So there was a reason. We had decided very early on, I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. I did like home-based business types of things, but in order to be able to afford stuff, and we went to Disney and different things, he had to work what he was working, you know, because they don't pay them very much money. So I think it was a very slow thing. And then it was just easier to not be in his presence, you know, like through SWAT, because he was right. We would plan things, but we never went in the same car. And then I found that I would plan things regardless of whether he was able to go or not. And sometimes I would even forget to tell him, because I'd be like, well, if he's able to go, I'll let him know. But chances are he won't be available.
It's almost like the cloak that Mitch puts on to protect him emotionally. You actually did that at a certain level, too, beginning to live a separate, almost parallel life, because the first responder's life is so unpredictable. You know, the call could come in and then your husband is gone.
Yeah. I mean, I did a lot of, I mean, we always changed holidays and stuff like that. That wasn't a big deal, but I definitely did many, many things where he wasn't present. You know, we did have talks about divorce or whatever, but then we also had talked about how our plan was not to get divorced. So figuring out, we've had battles over finances. We've had battles over intimacy. We've had all those battles. You know, now I joke with him, I'm like, well, we've been married 32 years. Like, really, like, we're kind of like getting past that point where, you know, we know that we sometimes don't like each other or whatever, but we know that we can like figure that part out. You know, I was able to do my own thing. I always wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. You know, I was able to do that. Mm-hmm. So in that part, I was happy. But I knew that he really wasn't happy, I think.
at the end.
At the end.
The first 10 years, it was different.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was, I mean, there was definite, for me, there was like a turning point. Mm-hmm. So it was, and I see a lot of people that have like a tipping point. So it's either one incident, one.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Yeah. And
the other thing is that a buddy of mine, Tom, we went to a weekend retreat. Mm. And I think that was the beginning of a turning point to the upside for us. So as I protected myself against everything that I saw and did, she protected herself against me. There isn't a switch to dial, right?
It's
and over time, I just dialed it down. The bonus is you can dial it back up. It just takes some time and effort. So there were a couple of things that changed. I got a mentor years ago. One of the things, because I didn't have time to do it in the TED Talk, because it's just, it's too much. So I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Okay.
And it was not a mentor. It was my sponsor in AA.
Got it.
And that's where that came about. And I can honestly say one of the things that happened to me was I was on the clock too much. I had been going to one meeting a week, one Alcoholics Anonymous meeting a week. That wasn't enough. So when things like when a resentment built, I didn't continue to use the things that I had used in the past. So I have been sober a very, very long time.
He's been sober since before the girls were born.
So you never had access to that self-medication when you were experiencing all of this secondary trauma. Okay.
Yeah. And it was the whole thing of my problem was I relaxed on the program that kept me sane and happy. And all I was doing at one point at a block of time was I was just not drinking, which is not enough.
What was the tipping point that made you begin to go, I'm going to begin employing some tools to deal with this?
I started employing the tools before I went to the therapist. I just did them more regularly after. When I was like, yeah, therapy isn't for me, so I'm going to actually, like this whole meditation gig, I'm going to actually give this a go.
Talk to us about what does that mean to give meditation a go? Because you're not exactly the typical person that when I look at you and go, oh, yeah, I can see that he's a meditation guy. Oh, right. Like you look like somebody who responds to SWAT calls.
So I bit the bullet and I paid some money and I did transcendental meditation. Mm-hmm. So I took some classes on that and that was cool and I liked it, but I didn't develop it into a routine. Like I couldn't develop a routine. So then I had shifted to a thing called mindfulness. And I had started using an app and I do really well with a day at a time. I'm programmed that way. So I didn't worry about not being good at it anymore. I completely understood that it is the practice of meditation. And there is a true art in being able to keep your head, your ass and your feet in the same place at the same time and not to project too far out or to get lost in the past and to be present. And
okay, I gotta interrupt because like I said, this is not the typical language that goes with meditation, keeping your head, your ass, and your feet in the same place. So can you just say what is it about that shifted? And my imagination is like that being present in this moment allowed you access to notice your emotions that you had dialed so far down that they were gone. And when you have to show up all parts of you in the moment, that dial on emotions begins to come up. And so did you notice that some of those emotional feelings began to surface when you were doing that kind of mindfulness?
So it was the mindfulness, re-engage in a 12-step program, and the whole thing of, like I said, picked up some information on the whole thing of our dog Louie actually had some time where he didn't want to be in the same room with me.
Mm-hmm. How did you learn to sit with him and pet him? Because I know that at one point your routine began when you came in the door, you'd spend a few minutes petting Louie. What did you notice when you're petting him? What did you notice happening in your body?
So it was an after, right? It was like reading after. And then I was like, I bet this is really actually happening. Like there wasn't a lot of conscious thought to the things that I was doing, to tell you the truth. right? These things kind of happened organically. And then I put them all together and I was like, well, if you incorporate, basically find your fit. There are so many different ways to de-stress and offload. Find those that work for you. So the whole thing of physical activity, right? Some kind of working out, the meditation and the mindful time with pets. Those were three keys that I could implement and did over time. And then another one that was added was gratitude. So mm-hmm. the ones that actually became habit for me were the physical activity, the gratitude, and the meditation.
Where do those things fit into your life? When you say they're a habit, where do they fit into your life?
In the morning. It's like with coffee. Okay. So like the first cup of coffee goes with the gratitude and a meditation.
Mitch, could you describe the checkup from the neck up?
Yeah. So that one is just a process of asking yourself a couple of questions. How am I doing? Like the whole thing of doing a self-assessment, to be honest, it's not as easy as it sounds. So to physically be still and to ask, how do I feel? The word hangry has become a real word. If you are like hungry and tired, the whole thing of anger could be on the backside of that. And it just could be a low blood sugar thing. But to, you know, how am I doing? Do I need a ham sandwich and a nap? You know what I mean? Like physically, how am I doing? And then the whole thing of how am I doing? How do I feel? Am I frustrated with something? Am I preoccupied? Am I angry? Am I sad? Am I overwhelmed? Or am I just grateful, joyful, right? Like, how do you feel, right? So do the checkup from the neck up and then address that, right? Like, take care of that before you go home. So if you have some positive things that are going on, you know, make sure you share them when you cross the threshold of your front door. Like share the win,
offload the loss. When you were first learning to do this, because you had gone to that firehouse where the rule was check your emotions at the door. And so for years you did that. What was it like when you began to tune back in and notice how you felt?
A couple of things. That one, I didn't pick it up first. I actually asked the guys that are doing this. I'm like, you may not see the change before somebody you're closest with does. So when guys tell me, man, I'm putting in all this work, I don't know if it's making any impact. And I'm like, ask your wife if she notices a difference. You know, that's like the gauge of, you know, is it working in your life? So
what you're saying is it's normal when your emotions are coming back online, when you're allowing yourself to notice them again, you may not feel much change for a while, but the people who live with you are noticing a difference.
Yep. And then it'll kick in a little bit with somebody that you care about will be going through a struggle and you'll feel it. Like you'll feel it. And it's like, oh. But the positive of that is the other, where there'll be an accomplishment or there'll be something and it'll be like, yes, and you'll feel it. So it like comes back, but it's a, you know, an ebb and a flow.
Michelle, what have you noticed in your marriage since Mitch stopped responding to SWAT calls and alarms and 911 calls?
I mean, we still struggle with some things. Part of it is me, right? Relearning how to not be so closed off.
How did you learn that?
What do you mean? To like relearn how to re-engage some?
Yeah.
I still am in the process of doing that. I mean, I still definitely, you know, we had one point in time where I don't even remember how long ago it was, I was trying to tell him something and he said, well, I can't help you with that. For him, meaning I can't help you with that right now. I'm sure. Me hearing, okay, that I'm not going to go to you about anything. And so it's still taking me, and I'm trying. I think I'm still a work in progress as far as that goes. I do work with middle schoolers, and I think that that's helping me because I'm learning pick your battles. I'm learning how to be more calm, I think, and how to give grace. I think I've learned from that. So I think that that does help some too. But I definitely see how my goal is for things to continue to improve. But it's really been nice having like time when we go out to eat, like having that planned on the calendar as a non-negotiable, unless somebody's sick or whatever, because we can count on that. So it is, it's just figuring out how, now that the kids are older, spending time intentionally with each other.
One of the things I hear is because, and I think that this job of first responder sets this up because, number one, weird hours. So, you know, you don't have predictable time together every day to develop that habit of sharing about your day. Number two, the wall, you know, the emotional wall of leave your emotions at the door. And then you forget to pick them up. So you're not an emotional person. And so it begins to create this dynamic in a relationship where the two people are just sort of, like you said, like a dial, just slowly parting ways because there isn't that intentional coming together. And what I hear is happening for you guys now is that you have this intentional space every Saturday to come together and you're both mindfully working on, I want to be present for all the feels. And in order to be with my partner, I got to learn how to talk to them again. And there's a template of how things were for a number of years. And even though things are different now, that template is still installed in your bodies. I know that for me, when my husband was going through medical school, when we got married, we were childhood sweethearts. So he was a carpenter for 10 years and then said, I think I want to go to medical school. Right. And I was pregnant with our second. And when I get panicked, my panic response is to just get more and more controlling. So I was the controlling machine in our marriage. And I am not that way anymore. I have done a lot of work to heal, and there will be moments when my husband will respond to me in a way, I think I'm being open and listening well and having a big wide open agenda. And he will respond to that controlling person. And I will still respond and say, I think your feelings are still hurt because I was hard on you. And we're finding a new template. And I'm not going to blame you. I'm just noticing we're finding a new way. Let's be patient with ourselves. And I do find that when I name it, that he relaxes. And, you know, when I was talking to you about why I stay married, when you are with your person, I was my ugliest version of myself. And David was still there loving me. And there is something about surviving those moments that when you get on the other side of the habits that are not facilitative, I have this confidence that his loyalty is incredible. And so that undergirds where our relationship is today. And so maybe it's not always beautiful and perfect and, you know, polished, but I have this foundation of just understanding a layer of love that survived a trauma. And that's a pretty big bond.
You don't realize how much a job is contributing to the template of how you and your sweetheart relate. I remember, because of my husband's wacky schedule, I just sort of went forward in my life and the life of our kids without him. There's strength in this for sure. I mean, I'm proud of how independent I've always been, but there was a cost as well. Invisible walls get built, intimacies go unshared, and before you know it, you've drifted apart. You aren't sharing your lives. Instead, you're just living parallel lives in the same house. So the habit I'd like to offer for you this week is to pause. Ask yourself, what kind of stressor your job or your sweetheart's job is putting on your relationship? And then wonder about the long-term consequences of a stress like that. Mitch took on a lot of work because he was the sole provider. But I think you can hear some of his regret about this overworking and that he'd make a different choice today. How about you? Is there anything that 10 years from now you would change about the work rhythm your job creates in your relationship. I hope you'll watch Mitch's TEDx talk. I've got a link in the show notes. And as I mentioned, even if you're not an emergency services provider, I think the 13 minutes of your time will be well spent because you won't be able to take for granted the sacrifices that other families make so that you have the safety net you need. That's it for today. I'm Rebecca Mullen, and this has been Habits for Your Happily Ever After, where we get clear about your marriage communication. Because when your relationships are strong, you're better able to concentrate at work, reduce conflict at home, and receive support for your dreams, so you can have the courage to live your best life. If you enjoyed this podcast, I'd be grateful if you'd send a link to your friend. Habits for Your Happily Ever After is produced by Grace Smith. All our music and sound comes from Walk West Productions. I'm Rebecca Mullen. Thanks for including me in your relationship today.